Hello and welcome to the Echo Chamber podcast. My name is Tony Groves, and today we are going to open the Pandora's box that is potentially General Election 2020 Part 2. Look, I want to just be very, very upfront about this, guys. It's been a tough time out there for everybody. I understand that, but it's no more tough than it is for us at the moment. We've new bills, we've new pays, we've new charges, we've new fees, we've all these things coming out, and we rely on patrons to help us through. If you have the price of a cup of coffee, head over to patreon.com/tortoiseshack. And actually, you know what? I have to say, I think it's great value. People have gotten to chat with Mary Lou McDonald, Lenny Abramson, Tara Flynn, Emmett Kirwin. You know, these live events are having a lovely vibe to them. So come on board and join us. It will really help. Speaking of one that doesn't help, Martin, how are you?
Yes, I am a live event today, Tony, in that I'm still here. So doing great. Thanks very much. Happy birthday to you, buddy.
Thank you.
Yes, happy birthday.
Thanks. We're much more importantly, we're delighted to be joined on the line by Dr. Jennifer Kavanagh, law lecturer in Waterford Institute of Technology, and self-professed nerd, I suppose, political, electoral, constitutional, anorak, and nerd. Jennifer, we have seen 105 days now, I think, we're into since the general election, and people keep coming out with the same sad line that the public won't thank anybody now if we have to go back to the electorate. I put it to you that if there hadn't been COVID, we'd already be agitating to go back to the electorate by at this stage.
Think the election will be over and done with by this stage.
Yeah, we would have had a second election by now, I would anticipate. If we were to do this, now I'm going to just go and the things I've read on are based in the US, and they're looking for $2 billion to do what they call in vote by mail in case the pandemic means that they can't have their US presidential election, and they want to extend that because there are already vote by mail protocols that they use in the US. In Ireland, where do we stand? What are the ground rules that we could do given the current restrictions?
Well, we pretty much now have two layers on the legislation that regulates elections. So we have the normal stuff that we're all used to, your postal votes, if you're working somewhere else in Ireland at the time, or you're a student, you've got your special voting if you're in long-term care facilities, and you know, your earlier voting on the islands, things like that. You have your nomination process where people go into the local council to put their name forward, all that. You have your general voting between, say, like 7 in the morning and about 10 o'clock at night. And that's how it is set out in the regulations. But as we found out from Tipperary, that can all be pretty much thrown out the window by using a what they call a special measures order or a special emergency order. So what happened in Tipperary was one of the candidates on the ballot paper passed away. It wasn't the timing was almost like a perfect storm because they couldn't just leave her off the ballot paper. It wasn't a case that the individual had passed away after the votes been counted because there's specific rules for that. So what was signed was that special difficulty order, and it meant what that means is that anything that is basically in the acts can be just done away with once it's in line with the general principles. So you can see how it would work for somebody passing away in those circumstances, or some small area where you've had an issue and you don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater. You can just smooth over that wrinkle that has come in that particular aspect. But if you bring in special difficulty orders for absolutely everything, so the social distancing, having, say, 3-4 day elections, having everyone doing postal voting, you could argue that you're changing the character of the elections so much that it doesn't have any bearing on the principles that were originally there. And bear in mind, the postal votes, I don't know how many people have used postal votes, but it puts the burden onto the Garda stations. So when I was up in Dublin doing my master's, I managed to get a postal vote, which meant I had to go to the local Garda station up in Dublin where I was living to vote. Do we want to push everyone from a polling booth into a Garda station that is going to be busy enough anyway? So it's pretty much the worst time to have an election in the middle of a pandemic, strictly from the regulation perspective, because the other aspect is that when it comes to the counts, First of all, your counts, you've probably seen the Shannon election counts. They went on a long time, longer than normal. So you're going to have to scale that up on a national basis. So we may not have a government right now, but we may not have any TDs for at least 2 weeks. So that's something that needs to be considered. And the other point is that the most important person in the count centre, apart from the presiding officer or the returning officer, is the agents of the candidates. Candidates don't necessarily go up and have the debates about, I think that one was a two or whatever. Hmm. The candidates don't do it. It's the agents, and they have a right to be present. They have a right to see what's going on. And how are you going to facilitate that right if you can't have people in the count centre? Because as we saw with the Shannon election, they asked the candidates, look, lads, will you, you know, stay at home there with a cup of tea and just watch it on the live feed? Because the Shannon, most people don't give it, in general terms, the importance that it does have. Mm. You know, the way before the Shannon election, everyone said, oh, everyone's appointed, which they weren't. But there's still that view that it's the second-class chamber of democracy in Ireland, so people didn't really give that much of an importance to it. Whereas the Dáil elections, like, you get the highest turnout for Dáil elections. They aren't the people who bring in the law. Mm. It is very important that people trust what's going on, and that's why you're going to have so many problems if you do run for that election.
It is a community event. It is something where everybody has a right or a vested interest to go and see what's going on. You can actually go to a count centre. You can do these things. How do we keep it a public forum? We can manage voting. That I think is easy enough to manage. It's everything after voting. How do we keep it open and transparent?
Well, just to point out, first of all, that nobody has an automatic right to get into a count centre.
Sorry, the tally.
Yeah, people. So, for example, where I live in Waterford, it can be quite hard to get those tickets. I tend to get them more for the RDS, but you have to, there's a process. Like, it's not a case like in Kilkenny, when they used to have it in Killinhill, I think it was. There was so much space. Anyone who wanted to turn up could just walk in. And I think that's something that should be facilitated where it can be done, because I've seen plenty of parents walking up with kids, and kids are actually interested in politics. Like, I went to the tribunals as a 15-year-old. I know that's absolutely not the norm, but it does happen. And I think it is a pity that there isn't more of a connection. But with the way it's done right now, the best you can do is just have the live streams. And they are a cure for insomnia. But it does allow for people to see what's going on. And when you can see what's going on in these places, people are kind of wondering, oh, I wonder what's going on there. And then all your conspiracy theories start. So it is important that there is that access. Now, normally people will do it by tuning in to one of the TV stations or one of the radio stations, because they'll have a continuing update on what's going on. I don't think any of them could actually afford to cancel their schedules for 2 weeks to continually cover what's actually going on. So you won't have that type of oversight. I don't know how talliers would actually operate. And talliers are like our community auditors in the election process. So, and I mean, that was the whole thing with the e-voting machines. It was so sudden, the result, that people hated it. And the fact that there was no talliers meant that nobody could double check. Even my own mother said, how do I spoil my vote? And I said, well, press every button and break the machine. So we don't like the immediacy or too much technology in it. We like the pencil and paper and the ticking away of the boxes, the creation of the tallies, the drama it creates. So, I mean, again, that's another way that the election will be completely different to anyone that we've ever seen before. And if we don't have the talliers, you would have people who, for good reason, might say, well, I don't know if I trust that result, because we didn't have a mapping of what was going on from the official to the tally. Now, some people will always have problems, and some people will always create a theory out of absolute nothing. But when you don't have that access to seeing what's going on, then, you know, you wouldn't blame people for asking questions.
We got a bit of an echo here, have we? Yeah, is that better there?
That's better there, yeah.
It was you, Martin. I bet you it was you.
No.
But okay, so it is difficult. It's actually quite difficult. We need to make sure that there's oversight. We need to make sure that people can vote safely, and we need to make sure that the people who are doing the count are safe. All of those things have to be taken into account. It's not simple, Martin. Voting isn't that easy. Well, I'm not that concerned about the candidates. You put yourself forward. That's part of politics. But
safety law would say something different.
But the alternative is this democratic vacuum that we have currently. We have a Dáil that can't make any legislation, has no real oversight, and has no real accountability. So it's kind of getting a soft ride but it is a quite an ugly blight that we have at the moment. It's just not been said enough that this is actually, the likes of the Irish Congress, Civil Liberties, the ICCL, they're talking about the fact that some of these emergency powers that we talked about were given to the police and all of that stuff. We can't even debate that. We know that we put in the sunset clause, but all of this stuff, it's just not appropriate in a functioning democracy.
Yeah.
So, as you know...
Well, personally, what needs to happen is this is pretty much like a warfare situation. And in the UK, even though they hated Churchill, they went in with him. And by having a situation where you have, tumbleweed when it comes to what's happening with the government. The whole lot of them should have just gotten together and say, look, we have been elected. Yeah, I can't stand you. I wouldn't even have a pint with you. But we just need to get in, get this sorted out, because it means nobody is able to then take the full praise for it, because you can say, oh, well, that party did that, but they did nothing, and they just sat in the back. They're all in, so it's a zero-sum game. Nobody's going to benefit or lose from this, but at least it will show maturity that, yeah, I might be in a party that literally I would rip strips off you if it was normal politics, but we are not in a normal situation here, and we just need to basically get our arses in gear and just sit down, deal with it and say, look, once the public health guidance has said, yeah, you can actually now have people in a situation where you can go to a polling station, just say, then we'll cut it. Which is basically what they did after World War II over in the UK. And that's what needs to be done. It's maturity as opposed to changing a system to deal with the fact that people are just not getting on with the job.
Yeah, and I think that's really well put, because of, we spoke about the need for maybe a unity government and the fact that would be the opportunity to do it, and we keep hearing this phrase, which I find really, really disgusting, to be honest with you, that where they say, they're trying to put together this government, and then they say, and Sinn Féin are on the outside there, but that's for other reasons.
That's pretty much like
Pat Leahy says it all the time.
Yeah, but it's
he's the political editor of the paper of record, and he uses this horrible phrase, and I'm going, it's just disgusting. Sorry.
Yeah, I would agree that, look, you can't just say, oh, you people who voted, that one third of you who voted for that particular party that we don't agree with, we don't like what you came up with, so we're just going to pretend it never happened. That to me is... It's not a line I would like to hear coming out, because everyone who gets up, gets to the polling station, puts their mark in the box, it is as valid as if it was for the Monster Raven Loony Party, as if it was for the best political party that created a political ambrosia or political nirvana, okay? Yeah. A vote is a vote, whether you like it or not. And at the end of the day, when they say, well, the people spoke, but we don't know what they said. Yeah, we do know what they said. They sent them in. So if you're the people who've been sent in, no matter who you are, it is your job to get something done. So yes. I think that deflecting it onto how we hold an election, it was important to kind of gameplay how we would hold an election in this situation, is detracting from the fact that there's a fundamental responsibility on politicians to do business with the people who have been elected, whether you like them or not. It's not a playground.
Yeah, I think for me what it is we, and we've heard this quite a bit, that there will be no profiteering from this situation. And yet the ones who are telling us that there will be no profiteering are absolutely profiteering politically from this situation and doing everything they can to profiteer from this situation. We see headlines like Leo Varadkar sees a bounce because of the epidemic, and you think yourself, no, there shouldn't be bounces in this. As you said, collective responsibility, but the flip side of collective responsibility is when it goes wrong, the blame is collective as well.
Exactly. So they're all equally to blame. So
yeah.
The thing is, then you're just going to have to try and make the best decisions that you can. Bring out the evidence, the academics or the specialists in the area. Keep it as much of an open dialogue as possible. And to be fair, you know, the Department of Health is trying to do their best on that ground. There's plenty of reasons why you can criticise them on different things. But we're dealing with a new virus that nobody has known of. Well, nobody has known of since at least December. Whether people think it's been, you know, in Ireland or what before then, but officially, scientifically, that's why it's called COVID-19, not because some people have this weird idea, there's been 19 of them, but because it came about in 2019. So that's how new it is. But, you know, there has to be this acknowledgement that, you know, we're going to be getting so much new information that, you know, sometimes the information isn't going to be quite right. It's going to be the best thing that we think. Mm-hmm. And by having that kind of national unity government, or just everyone just getting together and just dealing with this and keeping us on the straight and narrow while this is happening, then cut and run once you can, is almost kind of, I wouldn't say protecting them, but it is giving credence to the fact that, look, this is new. We're trying to do our best. Nobody has the answers, be it scientifically, be it academically, or even politically.
Mm. Yeah, it goes against this all in this together. You can't say all in this together except for you. You know, except for you.
We don't like you.
Yeah, and it is. There's a childishness to it. I find a childishness to it that you know, it's something you see in playgrounds where you're trying to get children to get on together. You know, it is kind of nonsense.
In civil society, even in a workplace, you can't discriminate on political grounds. You know, you can't. If you're an employer, you have to be able to. You know, you have to apply to the Equality Act and the heads of the Equality, and you can't do that. And yet, the people who are elected to actually engage in politics are saying, "No, don't like the banner you operate under." Therefore, that rules out. Now, you know, and then it doesn't help when I don't think there's enough pressure coming because obviously the situation is kind of. It's unique. It's unprecedented, as we keep saying. But we do need to see a bit more engagement in the, you know, through other forums. We're able to say, actually, this can't continue. We're into 104 days of this nonsense. And, you know.
Although when it comes to the summer, we probably won't notice the difference because they would have been on holidays anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know, and isn't that another indictment on the whole bloody thing? You know, pox on all your houses. You know, I just find it deeply, deeply disrespectful to the people who on February 8th went out and voted. Whatever our feelings about the Brexit Remain campaign and against the Leave campaign and how it all went down and whatever it was. There was a huge reaction to later on saying, you didn't respect my vote. And that was carried for a couple of years in the UK, and it was settled definitively a few months ago. This is the sort of thing that will only grow, I believe, momentum when they say, February 8th, I went out and voted. Didn't suit your results, so you just ploughed on as if nothing had happened. And I do think that it is a dangerous situation in a democratic country that has, you know, has democratic rules and a good constitution, albeit with you know, things that we need to change. These things need to be addressed. Are there other constitutional triggers that we have to act on to get this, you know, that can be pushed, buttons that can be pushed to force them into talk to one another? Or is it just we want people to grow up?
Well, the general train of thought, and I read some papers on this, was that when the Shannon was elected, that by then you should actually have a functioning government. But we've gone past that. Nothing
Way
has
past
happened.
That. Mm-hmm.
I think the main trigger would be if another party or group decided, right, we're going to nominate so-and-so for Taoiseach and we want to have the vote, and nobody gets voted as Taoiseach, that would be a trigger. Mm. Now, the realistic triggers will be budgets running out. Mm-hmm. So the word is that the social welfare or social protection, as they call it, budget, will be running out in the early summer. I would say the health is probably burning through money at a rate of knots, and they're going to need more cash, but you're not going to have any doll that will be able to pass legislation to do the budget. And as we know, Fine Gael have a particular problem with budgets and children's shoes in particular. So they're the only kind of practical triggers I could see. So until then, it could probably just keep running indefinitely. But we're going to have money to spend.
Yeah.
And if there's no money, there nothing's going to happen.
So when they do start hitting those crunch points on budgets, what happens then?
Well, either they gang together and they do something similar to what they did with the public health regulations. But I do know money bills have slightly more technical elements to that, so they mm-hmm. may not be able to get around it that way. So, you know, the way everyone keeps saying we're uncharted waters, we've literally left the maps and we've gone off the side of the table and nobody has a bog.
Yeah. Okay.
So really, is the government in charge, or I mean, is the government riding the horse? Is the horse riding the government at this stage? I mean, they're going to,
constitutionally speaking, the government that was there before the election is still there, so they continue in office until their successor is appointed. They just wait until there's a successor appointed, and that's what is there. That is the law of the land. So it just continues until somebody just says, right, that's it, that's enough.
But if you hit the budgetary crunch points and nothing can be done, what situation are you in then? Who actually can say, well, we can approve this budget or we can give money over here? Can anybody say it? Or are we just stuck in a bind?
I think we're pretty much stuck in a bind, because even if the civil servants try and do it, there was a case law up in Stormont where they were trying to do extra things on top of where ministers should have been able to sign off, and the courts in the UK said, no, you can't, that's not your job. So it's really just something that's just going to have to play out as it comes along, and we'll see what particular issues come up. But really, their hands are tight, because if you don't have a government, if you have, and in some situations you have ministers that have even lost their seat and have not even gone into the Senedd, making massive decisions that, even though constitutionally speaking and legally speaking they have the power to do that, they don't really have the moral authority to do that either. So
they don't have a mandate anymore either.
But that's what I mean by the moral authority, because nobody's even voted for you. So you're out, you're gone. But the constitution is saying that you hold office. Now, really, the constitution, when that was probably written up, was thinking Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael, governments in and out, in and out. There's not going to be issues of progress for government. But it just kind of showed how Irish democracy has developed beyond maybe what the constitution was envisaging when it was written, that you would have, you know, multi-party governments. You would have delays on basically the governing to-do list to be put into place, and whether you would need, you know, a court to look over it, or even possibly a referendum to kind of deal with something. But who knows?
Would a referendum be easier to hold?
Oh, sure. The referendum is going to be back into the same situation again. But at the end of the day, you would have to pass the legislation through the Dáil na Seanad to go on to vote to the people. We saw with the Eighth Amendment, things like that. You might have good ideas that could go into the constitution, but whether you'll actually get the political will to change it, who knows?
I think the last... So the main thing I'm taking away from this is we needed politicians to act like adults and just actually put aside their differences and actually form a unity government and get us through this and give themselves a level playing ground, what they say to everybody. And when this is over, we will go back to the people and seek a full mandate and we'll settle our differences that way.
Not get into any massive policies. Just say our to-do list is get the country through this, get it on a sound economic footing. We are not doing anything else. Leave the wolves and the lettuce at the door, and just get those points sorted. Leave the rest as it is, and just deal with it that way until we can actually get out safely to vote. Because look, if people are going to be seeing a polling clerk before they can see their own grandparents, you know, that's not going to work. No. People are not going to buy into that.
Yeah, I agree with you on that.
Dr. Jennifer Kavanagh, thank you so much for talking to us about the mess that is our current parliament and our situation. I hope that we can see some change in the next 2 weeks, because I don't think it can go any further than the next 2 weeks. I genuinely don't. I have heard the same things you've heard. They are coming up very close on the social protection budget, and once that hits, they they really do need to put something together. And I don't think, you know, there's a, my final piece, and it's more for listeners' benefits. I actually want to say the Greens, this idea that they're somehow the blocker to this, that's not true at all. The blocker to this is the fact that if you're saying that this party that has 12 seats is the blocker, when you're ignoring the party that won the biggest, had the biggest share of the vote, that's just nonsense. You know, we're picking facts here to suit different agendas. Let's look at this honestly and see what really happened on the 8th of February and what really is not being spoken about. Martin.
Doc, can I ask you one last thing? And you may not know about this. Derogation. Where do derogations fit in the political system? Could a civil servant get a derogation for making decisions on budgets?
Oh, that was the issue that came up with the case in Stormont, and they said that certain powers are given to ministers and they can't be delegated. It's a whole branch of admin law.
Yeah.
So they are very, very careful what they... the general thing is now they stick to what they're doing as a normal civil servant. If it looks like they're walking into the territory of the minister, they just back off. Now, bear in mind, UK, unwritten constitution, you've got... like the Northern Irish, Wales, etc., they've pretty different setup. But once it comes to the basic principles of derogation, things like that, we do tend to follow but tweak where we need to for our own situation. So I would say, firstly, on a legal perspective, probably won't touch with a barge pole. On a union perspective, definitely won't touch with a barge pole, so I can't see it happening.
Good. Thank you.
Listen, folks, thanks for listening. We will be back in your inbox in the next little while. If you can, please give us the price of a cup of coffee, patreon.com/tortoiseshack. And we might even get Martin a little turtle wax for that dome of his.
Yeah, it costs a lot, that does.
Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.